Welcome to Starfleet Universe On Call. I am Paul Franz, owner of Franz Games. I run SLB Online, FedCom Online, and Starfleet Warlord. Just reminder how to join us. We have a talkcast every Thursday night starting 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time. You can either join us on the phone, just dial 605-562-0444. And just follow the directions. The call ID is 17702. Or you can participate on the web. Just go to the Talkshoe website at www.talkshoe.com and search for call ID 17702. And don't forget to use the Chrome browser. And if you need to contact me for any reason, my email address is sfuoncall@gmail.com. That's sfuoncall@gmail.com. As also, if you need to reach me via Skype, my Skype ID is FranzGames, FranzGames. And of course, you can follow me on the Twitters. My account there for the podcast is sfuoncall. That's sfuoncall. And of course, my personal account is Paul Franz. And if you want to follow me there, just go to twitter.com/PaulFranz, and that's PaulFranz. And just a reminder that I'm very Catholic and I like tech. So those two combine very much so on that feed. And of course, this lovely talkcast gets turned to a podcast available on iTunes and various other feeds around the net. Some quick news from ADB. New on Warehouse 23, Drive-Thru RPG, and Wargame Vault this week was, of course, Captain's Log number 53, the supplemental file. You know, and this past week also, Steve Cole was finishing up the Captain's Log 53, because after there's a release, then there's additional stuff that goes in after the release, including the supplemental stuff. Also posting to the blogs and working on Shapeways and other backlog things that he hasn't done because of various medical issues in the past. But he's getting caught up. He did some more artwork for the Gorn Master Starship book, which is always good to see. And Steve Patrick was working on Gorn, of course, Cobb's Log number 53, getting that finished up, which it is now at this point. So he's been focusing mostly on SLB updates and also the Gorn Master Starship book. Gene was busy working on the supplemental file for Cobb's Log number 53. Also, of course, on Facebook and keeping, you know, being all friendly over there, in addition to uploading the different PDFs for, of course, the supplemental files available on those different e-tailers. And, you know, overall keeping the wolves at bay when it comes to the BBS, because we get them every once in a while, and it's good to just beat them down. Moving on to the SLB Online Tournament, we have, of course, the Sapphire Star Tournament number 1. 3 games have been completed. 2 others have been started that I know of. There might have been more. I know there's at least one that has not been started because of Bill Scheller is currently on vacation. He'll be on vacation for 2 weeks, and hopefully they can get that all worked out when he gets back. When it comes to the library, not much progress there. Frank has been mainly working on fixing issues with the current devs that are up there. So the current complete conversion is 2,481. With yet to be converted, it's 849. So percent complete, still stuck at 74.5%. And with that is the news for this week. And it's me, as one of the only Paul Franz, welcoming you to Starfleet Universe On Call. And tonight we have the one, the only, the Barry Kirk. How you doing, Barry?
Hey, I'm doing fabulous.
Awesome. Of course, we have David and Russ in the chat room. So, what were you going to say, Barry?
It would be nice if they could call in, but okay.
Yeah, well, I know, like, so I'm not sure. Yeah. I think Russ barely makes it in, and Dave usually just listens to us while he's doing other things. So it's like listen to the radio, you know. And that's fine. Every once in a while they chat in, which is good. And I always encourage people to show up, and you know.
Yeah.
Used to be able to get a few more people to show up, but it's a little less these days.
Right.
I'm not sure whether it's because of the only thing that works currently is Chrome. You can't use any other browser when it comes to TalkShoe, or it's something else. I'm not sure which.
That's ugly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I guess tonight's topic of conversation is the Trobriand Tournament Cruiser.
Yep.
And I emailed you a whole bunch of rev levels, and you can see that we never quite got it right.
Yeah, agreed. I know we play tested to Trobriand multiple times.
Yeah. And the thing is, it has a lot of possibility.
Oh, yeah.
It's just like finding the magical point is tricky. And I think the chip it actually resembles the most is the ISC.
That's exactly what I was looking at the ships, meaning it has both direct fire weapons and it has seeking weapons.
Plasma. Yes. Yes. It is a plasma-based race. And the plasma uses, the implosion torpedoes, have quite a few differences between them and a regular plasma.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
yeah. The number one thing, which you pointed out in the, Russ, actually, I brought up the SSD on YouTube. Was there more than one SSD in that PDF that you sent me?
I gave you the PDF because the PDF had the weapons charts.
Right.
But the PDF was the original heavy cruiser that I was given. That's basically the heavy cruiser right out of the SSD book. And it's a beast. I think I mentioned that I played it once against a tournament cruiser. And we got to range 2. We did a mutual alpha strike. And he blew up and he didn't even get through my armor. Close, but did not penetrate the armor. And it's like, okay, this is just too powerful. So, that, having said that, the tournament cruiser I was going up against was an Andromedan. I don't know why he closed to range 2 and allowed me to front center line him, but that was not a good. So, any case. So, the implosion bolts, in a lot of ways, are kind of like a PPD. They're accurate at longer ranges. It hits hard. And you probably don't have that many of them. I know it's fire and it hits instantly, unlike a PPD, which is over 4 impulses. But effectively, it does a lot of damage at long range, and it's accurate at range. I mean, out at range 6, it still, it uses 2 dice. So hit number is a 9 out at range 6, basic, which is almost certain to hit, but not quite. And it still does 16 points of damage at that range. Go out to range 9, and it still has a better than 50-50 chance of hitting, doing 14 points of damage. So, very powerful weapon. And there were some variants of the ship that had 1, and some variants in the latest version I had 2. And the reason I went to 2 was that with a PPD, kind of hard to brick it completely. It maxes out at doing about 24 points of damage total. And that's a lot more than 16, which is what typically the implosion bolt will do. 16 points you can mostly brick. 24, not so much. So people tend not to try to brick in a PPD. But with 1 implosion bolt, yeah. They were like, I'll brick, because it is a 3-turn arming weapon. takes forever to get it back up and running again. So that was the reasoning that I added a second implosion bolt to the fourth rev, which I think is the current tournament cruiser. Now, the other thing is that notice that the, and by the way, a left side and the right side eye implosion bolt, that's the same as the heavy cruiser. I don't believe there's a light cruiser in the SSD book. Tobin's never made one. Or at least it's not. Yeah, it's not in the SSD book. So I had to create my own. But their heavy cruiser has a left side and a right side ID, which is an interesting arrangement in that unless you've got your opponent front center line or rear center line, you can't hit him with both. But you've got 360-degree coverage of your heavy weapon, which is kind of interesting. Although you only can fire one at a time, and, or typically you'll only be able to fire one at a time. So there's that. But this ship can make much better use of its rear shields than most because of its weapon arcs.
Right, right. Oh, yeah. The left side, right side is just incredible.
Yes.
So, and it looks like it's really good for fighting off to the sides, period, because you've got everything, most of the things are right side, left side, and then we have the few things which are like the phaser threes, which are forward extended, rear extended, which cover, you know, the sides really well.
Yes. So the phaser arcs are, now the phaser ones are all one, almost all weapons other than the P3s, every single weapon on the ship is 180-degree arcs.
Except for, look, the revision 4, you have two PR1s, which are 360.
Oh, I'm sorry, yes. The two PR1s, no, that is every ship, every Trogan, even from the heavy on down, they had those two 360 PR1s. I forgot about those.
Right.
Yeah. Now, it only has six PR1s, which I guess is similar to the ISC, only having six heavy phaser ones. Is that correct?
Yeah, agreed. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Four PR3s, there's a caveat with the PRs, and that is they typically do more damage than an alpha phaser. If you look at it, there's no dice rolling with a PR. It's just look at the range, that's how much damage it does. And you'll see that some of the ranges, it has a half point of damage. So a PR1 at range 2 does 5.5 points of damage.
Right.
And what that means is that if you fire one of them, it just does 5 points of damage. The other half gets lost. If you fire two, you add up 5.5 and 5.5, it does 11 points.
Okay. So these are automatic hits.
They're automatic hits. They automatically do. If you look at the range, that's the damage they do.
Right. Understood. Understood. Dang.
Now, there is a downside to the PR3s, and that is versus drones.
Right.
A single PR3 cannot kill a drone. The only possible exception is if you have an admin shuttle with a PR3 and you launch the admin shuttle and the drone passes through the same hex with the admin shuttle on its way to the ship, the admin shuttle can fire its PR3 at range 0. Killing a Type 1 drone. That's the only place where it can do that.
Right.
A single PR3 cannot kill a drone, but a pair of them can auto-kill any size drone.
and the PR-1s can auto-kill any size drone also.
Right.
They do a lot more damage than standard phasers. Typically, you have to single point more on average than a phaser, than an alpha phaser. So they're very powerful phasers. The PR-1s are. The PR-3s are a little feeble.
Yeah, at the same time, in my mind, they're a little more powerful in when it comes to the closer ranges, but most part, it looks like, I mean, it's a tiny bit above a phaser one average, but for the most part, it looks like the phaser one average the hit. I mean, average damage.
Right.
Obviously,
at range 3 and 2, they start to get very powerful.
Right, right. And of course, there's always the thing, as we mentioned last week, with the color guard, which is it does hits. When it hits, it does the same amount of damage. And when you get close in range, it's auto hits.
Yeah.
Just like these are all auto hits, which means that there's no average. It's like you just did as much damage, and that's it.
Right. Moving on to the and the implosion bolts are also very accurate. So this ship, pretty much, there's almost no dice rolling. The torps, they don't have dice. The bolts are the only thing that you have a dice with, and they're very, very accurate. So it's almost a diceless ship.
Oh, I agree. At least up close.
Implosion.
At least up close. I'm looking at like the 4 to 6 and 7 to 8, 7 to 9 range. You can miss when it comes to the bolts.
Yes, at 7 to 9, it starts to miss. 4 to 6, you can miss, but it's not likely.
Right.
One to three,
agreed.
Again, the torps. Now here's where the ship kind of falls down. Most people say, oh, the light's equivalent to a plasma F, the medium's a G, the heavy is an S, and the super heavy is an R. And not quite. In that the heavy, and it only has one of those, yes, at very close ranges it does more than an S. But keep in mind that the S retains its 30-point warhead all the way out to range 10, whereas the heavy loses one damage per hex traveled. So by the time it gets out to range 10, it's at 22-point warhead.
Right.
So on the other hand, at the very extreme end of the travel, the implosion torps tend to have a longer range than the plasmas.
Right.
They're not doing much damage at that range, but they do tend to have a longer range. And usually when a plasma hits at the end of its run, that's because the opponent has turned tail and run. And in that sense, the implosion torp is actually much better, because hitting at range 1 rather than range 0 means it catches up maybe 5 hexes, 10 hexes earlier.
Yeah, and
so the range is a lot.
And the one thing I've always had a problem with fighting against the Trobriand is that one key element, which is really hard to keep in mind, which is the implosion torps hit at range 1, not range 0, range 1, which means everything that you normally are doing at range 1 you have to do it range two. I.e., try to keep it out to range two instead of keeping it out to range one. Right. So and that is a constant struggle when fighting against a troper and there's implosion torps.
Yes, I remember that happened to you several times.
Yes, it
did. Turning too late. It's like, oh, I can turn and run it out, and oops, no,
whoops, it hits me. Dang, I forgot about this range one.
Yeah. And the other thing about a range one is that sometimes you can get to pick the shield a little. The torp sometimes gets to pick the shield it hits on, not the ship that so you have more control as the attacker as to which shield gets hit. Slightly more.
Mm-hmm.
On the downside, there are no bolts, there are no pseudos, there's no fast load, there's no EPT, there's no shotgun, but that's rarely used. But all those options, the implosion torp does not have. That's very significant. And The other thing is, but here's one thing that kind of makes up for it, is you don't know which torp was launched.
Right.
So if there's two in arc, and they're both charged and ready to go, the launcher is hidden and the torpedo, it's unknown what the strength of the torpedo is when it launches until you lab it.
And you have to lab it at range two. You can't lab it at range one.
Right. So the question is, did he launch a heavy at me or did he launch a light?
Yep.
If it's a light, I might want to run through it and go for it. If he launched the heavy, I probably don't want to run through that. But how do I tell which it is? If I get close enough to lab it, it's going to be a lot harder to run it out.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I am, okay, it's the heavy. I turn tail and start running. It catches up. I start labbing. What range do I lab it at to say, it's three or four. All of a sudden, that's a little hard. Sometimes I might run out of labs. But let's say, it's a light. Now I have to start turning back around. So in that sense, it's kind of like a pseudo.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Well, at the very least, it makes it a shell game.
Guessing game.
Oh yeah, guessing game.
The shell game.
Where is it one or the other? And you won't really be able to tell. There's only two ways to tell. One, well, actually three ways. One, it hits you. Two, you run it out as if it might be a light. I run it out as if it was heavy, and see if it runs out of energy, basically dies a lot earlier than it should, or finally a lab will also reveal the strength.
Yeah, if you run it out, even running out of light, remember it had to travel 16 hexes to run out.
I know.
Yeah.
I didn't say it was a good idea. I just said that's one of the few ways of figuring out if it was heavier or light.
Yeah. Yeah, but at that point, it's done its job.
Right.
Pushed you away.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Especially if it's a, if it turned out to be a light, it's like, okay, well, you assume that it was a heavy, it was going to hurt you a lot more than it is, and that's why you're running away. And it turns out to be a light, so, you know, you could have turned in much sooner. At that point, you've already, yeah. It's already done its job, as you said, you know, acting as mobile terrain. And that, so the person, mm-hmm. you know, basically turns tail, and then you can, at that point, the Trobriand controls the engagement more, basically the initiative, because now the other person's running right. And you're following.
Yeah. Now, this only has three plasmas, so most plasma armed ships have four plasmas. This one only has three. Even the ISC has four. And two of them are the lights, which, to tell you the truth, are probably a little bit lighter than an F.
Oh, yeah. Well, definitely is. But one thing you were about to bring up when it comes to one of those interesting differences when it comes to the implosion torps and plasma, and that is that the damage goes down by each 1 point per hex traveled. So it's a linear curve. It's not these steps mm-hmm. that occur when it comes mm-hmm. to plasma.
Yes. Yes. So, yeah. And that's why plasma torpedoes in that, for everything except a plasma F, the S's and the G's, out to range 10, they're all still at full strength. This one is losing damage the whole way out.
Right.
Another thing is that it doesn't have very much power. It has very little power. And
definitely the two-thirds movement tournament ship compared to the original one, which was movement cost 1.
Yeah. Right.
Which is always, to be honest, that kind of thing is always a debate in my mind because of,
right.
you've got movement cost to be higher. That means you have more actual power. But then also that means when you move, you're using more power.
Right.
So when you're moving slower... Yeah, you're probably benefiting from having a larger ship and more power, but when you're going faster, they're not really they don't have that much gain, if any, yeah. compared to two-thirds arming ship.
Right. I did create a heavy cruiser version of it, which I also emailed to you. And I think I can't remember whether I said, at one point I said, you know, the 33 power just wasn't enough. So the heavy cruiser version has 39 power. And right. It actually has less weapons than the light cruiser. It's missing the two FXP3s.
The two FX3s. P3s, yep.
Yeah. So, I don't know. But I think it kind of needs those FXP PO3s. It really needs it for, because it has, just any drone user is going to give this ship a hard day anyway. And a ship with only 8 phasers, and phasers that you need a pair of them to take out a drone, mm-hmm. guaranteed. I'm sorry, the PR1s automatically take out a drone, but it's going to have tough times against a drone user.
Yeah,
but
again, we've discussed it multiple times, and that is, Omega missiles versus drones. There's a big difference there.
Oh, there is. And that's, Jamaica missiles.
Right, and that's one thing we have to get into when it comes to some of the next tournaments. Should we talk about like maybe the Mazaron?
Yes.
You know, and because so far we've been talking about basically plasma based races. The color guard was not.
Yeah, I think this is. I thought we talked about the Mazaron.
We talked about a little bit when we first started it. But I'm not sure we really went into a lot of the Mazaron's options when it comes to how much damage the missiles need can take versus a regular drone and what kind of damage it can do on using their missiles. I forget what they're called at the moment, off the top of my head.
Tachyon
missiles, yeah.
Well, hang on. Let me pull up the Mazaron. Let's see which one we're using. This one. It had, oh God, I had a lot of text on this one. So I gave it 2 Tachyon missile launchers. So that means it can only launch 1 Tachyon missile per turn. They're type Bs, which means it has a total of 10 missiles on board. All Tachyon missiles have 28 speed? Hang on a second. A zoom function? No, I don't. All Tachyon missiles have a 28 speed prop module, an effective speed of 24. The rules for making Tachyon missiles are wonky.
Right. Which is why you have so much text on that SSD.
Base speed. And then for every module or space point you use, it reduces the speed by 1. So I put 4 space points of modules in it. So it's got a speed of 24. Let's see. Tachyon missiles can be freely chosen from the following 2 types. One is armor 12, so it takes 12 points to kill it, doing 16 points of damage if it hits. And it takes, and it's got an anti-tractor 1. So it takes 2-point tractor to kill it, or to hold it. The other one takes 15 points to kill it, but it only does 8 if it hits, and also has the 1-point anti-tractor. So you got one that's almost impossible to kill, but only does 8 points of damage if it hits. And the other one is tough. But remember that a single drone can kill the lightly armored one and very badly damage the other one. Let's see. Here's one that, I created another variant that I created 4 different missile types for this one. Type 3 and a type 4. But this was, I had to create 2 modules that I mentioned to, I even created the rules for them, and I emailed the rules for those modules to Steve Petrick, and he basically said, no. But the one module was called a phaser defense module, which basically I think had it had a number of P3s. It might have been, can't remember whether it was 2, 3, or 4 P3s on it, but those P3s were only usable against seeking weapons targeted on the missile itself. So basically, it was a missile with its own point defense. But it had only 10 armor, and it did an explosion of 12. So it was a lot less powerful. It gave up a lot for that phaser defense module. It lost armor and explosion strength. The other one was even weaker. Its explosion was only 8, but it had, do you remember the Warp SEF, subspace energy field? You there, Paul?
Oh, oops, I hit the mute button. Sorry about that.
Oh.
Yes.
Okay. Do you remember the Warp SES module?
Yes, I do.
I put one of them on a Tachyon missile.
Oh, my.
Well, it's a monster-sized missile. What the heck?
Yeah, agreed.
Now, it was a very limited duration SES module. But the idea there was that you would have one missile with that SEF module, and it would kind of sheep herd the other missile, mm-hmm. so that and it would protect it against drones. But now it was kind of tricky to use. Because with an SES module, once it's activated, it's only active for so many impulses to make those down.
Right.
So if you launch the missile at longer ranges, then your opponent would have a chance to just lob missiles with drones in one at a time. And, okay, the first one, you fire up the SES, but it goes down again before then you can launch another drone, and he doesn't have an SEF anymore. Mm-hmm. So basically it was saying that we needed 2, maybe 3 drones to take out one missile rather than one.
Right.
It's
a good idea. But let's get back to the Trobriand, which is...
Yes. All right. The Rev 4 one, I think we had decided it just didn't have enough power.
Yeah.
That was a problem. It could not, it had no chance of winning.
Right.
You
so,
fire your weapons. Go ahead. Okay. The Rev 4 just didn't have enough power.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem was, you know, the first turn or two, it was great. I mean, you fire your weapons, but now you've got empty weapons. All you've done is damaged your opponent's shields. You really haven't done much penetration. You haven't done much internals. Everything's empty. You got to turn around, run, and recharge. And this ship just can't walk and chew gum at the same time.
Yeah.
It just doesn't have the power for it.
Right, which is not good.
Yeah. the light implosion torps are just too feeble to use as a
deterrent
against somebody chasing you. Yes, they can fire to the rear, but it just doesn't have the deterrent value. A plasma F would be even better.
Oh yeah, well,
plasma F would be far.
Yeah, well, the steps, you know, because that's the good thing about plasma Fs is that all the way out to range, just range 5, it's good for 20. Out to range,
yes,
10, it's good for 15.
Right.
Versus the plasma, the implosion torps, where it starts at 16, and then the first hex is 15. Next hex is 14, 13. Yeah. So by the time it gets out to range 10, it's a 6-pointer.
Yeah. Now, you're not going to fire it unless the guy's like 10 hexes behind you and chasing you.
Right.
So, and yeah. But still, the implosion torp is down to about 10 points at that point, whereas the plasma F could still potentially hit for 20, almost double the damage.
Right.
Yeah. The lights are almost an afterthought. It's more like the ship has two pseudos that are rechargeable. Maybe it'll do a little damage. That's about it. That's what they're there for.
Yeah, I'm looking at version 1, which was interesting. That was using the had the two mediums implosion torps, two mediums. It didn't have the light, which was added on revision 2. But
right, that one had two mediums, but it did not have the heavy.
Right.
We found out very quickly that was far too feeble.
Right.
The PR3s up front either.
Right, it didn't have the PR3s, but it did have the two, instead of one, implosion bolts.
Yes. And I said, okay, that one was way too, it just couldn't win against anybody. And then, because I remember what happened. That was the first one I made. And after the monster ship that I had gotten from Ken, I said, okay, I got to tone this thing way down. And I went way too far. Rev 2, I actually pulled out an implosion bolt and gave it an extra light. I don't know what I was thinking there.
Mm-hmm.
A light is certainly not as powerful as an implosion bolt.
Oh, agreed.
Yeah. That didn't last long either. And then Rev 2. That's Rev 2. And then Rev 3. I said, okay, give it the front FX PR3s and give it a heavy.
Right, and still a single implosion bolt.
And a single implosion bolt. That still wasn't powerful enough.
Right.
Then I went Rev 4, where I gave it a second implosion bolt.
And the weird part about this, all this, is that it seems like we're going back to the original CA because the power issue. Basically, Let me just double check here because I'm pretty sure this is the case, which is, no, it's not, it's a little more powerful than the Revision 4. Has most of the weaponry of Revision 4. But Revision 4 obviously has the FX PR3s. And the Revision 4 has lights instead of mediums.
Well, the there's a heavy cruiser that I gave you that I had actually done. And that one has two lights, a heavy torque. It has basically it's the same thing as the Rev 4 version, but in a heavy cruiser format.
Okay.
But I pulled out the PR3s up front, which I should not have done. I don't know why I did that.
Don't know.
That's interesting. I actually pulled out four armor and two PR3s when I went to the heavy. But I gave it more hull, more forward hull, and more aft hull. So I gave it less armor, but more hull, and I pulled out two of the PR3s, which I probably need to put back.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm thinking the heavy is probably the way to go. That has 39 power. That can. But we've never play tested that one.
Yeah, I think we should.
Yeah,
I still like to play the soldier.
Oh gosh.
The soldier is definitely an interesting ship. You must admit that.
Well, you of all people would say that because it's the Omega version of Andromedan.
Why would that interest me whatsoever? I'm not. What you're inferring?
You don't like Andromedan, do you?
No, of course I don't. Andros rule. But yeah.
I don't know how. I mean, there's some parts about the soldier that are nice, but I just don't know how to balance them.
Oh, agreed. Well, Barry, I think the big thing there when it comes to soldier, period, is neither you nor I have a good feel for the ship, how those systems. Mm-hmm. Actually interact. Because, see, that's what the problem was when people were trying to fix the Andromedan. They didn't really, other than Paul Scott, nobody really had a good feel for what the actual issue was, how the systems work together as an integrated ship, and how to fix it so that it was more balanced.
Yeah.
And until we understand that how the ship works as a complete unit, rules, weapons, and obviously part of the weapons is the shards, and how those all work together when it comes to cohesive tactics and strategy, we will have an impossible task ahead of us to trying to balance it.
Yeah.
You know.
And that ship is going to be a very hard one to play because its shields are actually pretty freaking weak. They really are. But they have a regeneration capability, which the black shards can actually enhance that.
Right. And when it comes to the soldier, also, the thing is, you can move around those shields each turn.
Yes, you can.
Now, I'm not sure about the limitations of the of moving those shields. Are there limitations?
You can only do it during energy allocation.
That's it. So basically, if you want to, you could move it. All of your shield from one side to the other side.
Yep.
Okay.
So turn one, you could have everything on your number one shield. And turn two, you could have everything on your number three shield. You could do that.
Right.
Don't recommend it.
And the which brings me to the point of what that means is something which is violates one of those tactics that people use, i.e. hack and slash. A soldier can, you have a hard time doing a hack and slash as long as they have shields against a soldier. Because you can knock the shields down on impulse 32, but impulse 1, you can have a full shield right in front of your face.
Yes, you can.
So, you know, that makes
right.
Makes fighting the soldier a little more problematic. Obviously, the just like the Andromeda has the issue with managing energy. That's one of the big gotchas of flying the Andromeda. Yeah. The one of the more difficult things you're constantly thinking about. And when it comes to the soldier, to my mind, the constant thing you're thinking about is shield facing. Because you have to put those available shields to whatever the facing will be for that shield, partial shield, you know, the shield boxes. And then you have to fly that turn based on what you decide.
Yeah, I'm pulling up the soldier now. The light cruiser I created, and it has 15 shield blocks. Yeah, 15 shield blocks. Each block is a 6-point shield. That's 90 points of shields.
Right.
That's a lot less shields than anybody else has.
Right.
And I don't think you can reinforce them.
Yeah, that would not surprise me. But at the same time, you don't know how that much. I don't think that it's a weird ship.
You might be able to reinforce them. I can't remember, but I don't think you can.
Yeah, I have to look it up.
The only 90 points of shield. Mm-hmm. Heck, that's like just shields 1, 2, and 6 on a regular ship. Not quite half the shield boxes of another ship, but it's about, 60%, 55% right. The shield boxes.
And And as I pointed out, you have to put those where you think you will need them, because it's possible you figure, okay, I'm not going to need any shielding for shield number 2 and 3, because I'll be fighting purely, you know, I should be just, you know, shields number 1, 6, and 5. That's all I probably should need. Maybe I'll allocate some to shield 4 just in case. But, you know, and that's right. It. Now, again, in my mind, the soldier has to stay with fight against the Omega opponents. Because, for example, you could not have a soldier against a Hydran. The soldier would die. Because you have 90 boxes of shields, which you have to go all around the ship so that the Hellbore won't actually penetrate the shield.
Right.
No, so you can never play that at all, ever. Yeah. You know? Which is why it's a good separation, a good idea to have a separation of, you know, Omega versus Alpha, and not try to make a combined tournament, put them in it.
I don't know that the soldier can be balanced against anybody.
Again, when it comes to that, I think we don't understand it enough to even say that for a fact. Yeah. We can posit it that at the moment we cannot balance it, and I'll agree there. But it would require more. It's possible it might be able to do it if we do more research. Just like the Andromeda, people thought you couldn't balance it. But actually, you can balance it without nuking it. You know, yes. But people just—they went the wrong direction. They decided, okay, it needs to have less power, needs to have less weapons. And I was like, no, that's not the solution.
Right.
Oy. Yeah. So.
But getting back to the Trilbrin.
Yep. Definitely.
That is about, I think that one is within the realm of possibility that I can get that to work.
Oh, I agree. The big issue, obviously, is that, now, this is why Mr. Petrick always wants playtest reports, and that is, you have to repeat the scenario multiple times, just like our little game on Saturday. I died pretty fast because I made a tactical error is what I did.
Yeah.
I got into range 2 of a Caligar, and I wish I should have never done. I wanted to stay at range 4. I just didn't do the right moves to make that possible.
Right.
But,
yeah.
So, you know, and obviously that was a mistake, and that was one thing you can, as a playtest report, you throw out because of, basically it was a tactical mistake. You can't say that you made a tactical mistake if you made a tactical mistake and you won, there's a big issue. But that's it's definitive that what happened with me, I made a tactical mistake because obviously the Caligar, is really good at range 2 because of all those automatic hits. And then, of course, for me, on top of that, I also had the midterm speed change at exactly the wrong movement, too. Which allowed you to stay at range 2 and do a hit and get your other weapons to bear.
Right, and that hit was the game.
That was the coup de grace, is what it was. I was, as is without that, I still was very hurt.
Yes.
You know. So.
Right.
But that's with the trouble. We have to play it more. You know.
For those people who are listening in, we got to range 2. I think Paul had. We were both going speed 24. I had a couple of points of power pre-allocated into a hit. In range 2, we did an alpha strike. My number 6 shield to Paul's number 6 shield. The following impulse, neither one of us moved, but he had dropped his speed to 17, and he did not have sufficient batteries left. He had used them for reinforcement, so he was unable to do a hit. I was, so I did a hit, and
I didn't have the reserve power. Period. Just because you blew off enough of my reserve power, so even if I would have tried to save it, I couldn't have done a hit anyway.
Right, and I then I brought my other weapons to bear, and basically I was able to fire every single weapon on the ship at range 2 over 2 consecutive impulses. And it was that second volley that just...
Yeah, totally killed me.
Yeah, I was out... my weapons were all empty at that point, but you were not going anywhere. As Khan said, the Enterprise isn't going anywhere. It's too badly damaged.
Yep. Agreed. But with the Trilbrin, yeah... It's a whole balance of how much power do we give it against the weapons that that it has. Because it has to have enough potential to defeat an opponent. At the same time, you got to make sure it doesn't have too much power to completely overrun the opponent with little resistance.
Well, that is certainly not a knife fighting ship.
Agreed.
Yeah.
Well, it's hard to be a knife fighting ship when, one, you don't have that many single turn arming weapons. I have six phase. You know, okay. I'm looking at the heavy cruiser version. That's
Which is going to need two. I'm going to add two more PR3s to it. But yeah,
right. But
its phasers, I think, are they're not bad. In fact, it might actually have slightly superior phasers to most ships, simply because it's got less of them, but they're a little more powerful. So it's not too bad in the phaser department.
Oh, agreed.
But makes it not a knife fighter is all those three-turn arming weapons.
Right, exactly. That's what I was trying to get to. That is, it doesn't have enough single-turn arming weapons to be a really decent knife fighter.
Yeah. Also, it's a horrible knife fighter. Yeah.
Well, you can do it.
Yeah.
It's just that Barry, it all depends on what kind of opponent you're fighting, to be honest. Because if your opponent also has a two-turn arming weapon or three-turn arming weapon, what changes?
Well,
in that case, you both have the same issue, which is you don't have that many weapons each turn. So that means that, in theory, you can knife fight basically the same to a certain degree. Obviously, the biggest one of the other issues is, of course, the turn mode D, which does not help as a knife fighter.
No. Well, turn mode D, but it can fight out of any shield arc because of the weapon facings.
Right. That's true.
Yeah. That actually makes a huge difference, the fact that,
But, you know, the single-turn arming weapons, which is the PRs, it's not public relations people. for each side, you got a four phaser ones facing.
Yes.
Which is not great, but of course, same time, they're automatic hits and they have a fixed amount of damage.
Yeah.
And if you're lucky, you can get all six facing, which is possible, you know, directly forward and directly aft, and that's it.
Right, and that's something that most ships can't do, is that this ship can fire virtually every weapon on the ship directly aft. Not too many other ships have that capability. It could be interesting.
Yep, agreed. And I think it's still worth pursuing of trying to balance the ship.
Yes. So for our next battle, do we want to do a Trobriand, or do we want to continue to play test the Culligar?
Actually, I'd like to try the Trobriand. I'd like to try to play that out.
Okay. Do you want to take the Trobriand?
Yes, I would.
Okay.
Oh, are you going to be able to come? Reminds me, are you going to be coming, be able to stop by this weekend or not? I know you mentioned possibility of being in Pittsburgh.
Probably yes. I think the answer is probably yes.
Okay.
Would Saturday be a good day for you or Sunday?
Saturday would be a great day for me.
All right. I do have one. I'm going to have to bring a laptop because there's one service call I have to make on Saturday.
That's fine.
And that's just one of our customers is hooking up a selector switch, and I have to make sure that they wired it correctly. So somebody's going to be standing there in Oklahoma flipping the switch, and I'm going to be in your house saying, yep, it's in that position. Yep, it's in that position.
Understood. Yeah, that has to be start like early afternoon.
Yeah, but that process probably won't take more than a half hour.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Then, we'll figure out exactly the time a little bit later.
Yeah.
Pretty soon, though, because it's already Thursday.
Right.
But anyway, I think with that, we'll wrap it up. And we'll obviously, if you're able to make it next week, we can report back on our adventures to see how well it fared. Hopefully I can do a little better this time.
Then I guess we should probably look at the Mazaron for our next week's ship.
I would truly enjoy that.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that, Barry, why don't you have a good night?
You too.
Okay, bye. So we had a nice little discussion there about the Trobriand and some of the other Omega tournament ships. I think the one thing about the Omega tournament ships, obviously, is that the one thing that's really kind of cool about the Omegas is that they present definitely different tactical and strategic options that are not available in the Alpha Octant. And when it comes to the weapons and the ships, the way they're designed, like the Soldra being one of those really unique ships, as in the Omega, which I didn't know about this until Barry mentioned this past weekend, which is basically they're crystals. So you can't do a hit-and-run raid against them. It's like, okay, so even though they might have a shield facing you, you still can't do a hit-and-run raid. But I haven't looked at the rules, and I'm sure Barry will correct me next week whether they actually can do hit-and-run raids themselves. Don't know. I'm not really up on soldiers, that empire. But anyway, that's the kind of unique thing that can exist in the Omega, that the soldier could never, ever exist at all in the Alpha Octant just because of the Hydrants. They might be, as long as they stayed away from the Hydrants, maybe they could survive in that environment, but they can't. But the important thing is that it presents a totally different tactical situation because of you got the soldier, which... Not just just the dark energy and how that does damage, but also, as pointed out, we have the shields, which you can put them on any shield facing, which makes it interesting of, if you think about the second generation X ships, is that something that they might have for the second generation X ships? Have more flexible shields is one way of going. With second generation X ships or something along those lines. But we'll just have to wait and see if they ever get around to actually doing the second generation X ships, which obviously most of us would love to see. So with that, I am Paul Franz, and I bid you a good night.